You're listening to English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, number 39. This is the English Cafe, episode 39. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in the beautiful city of Los Angeles in the beautiful state of California. On today's cafe, we're going to talk about country music, one of the most popular forms of music in the United States in some places. We're also going to talk about the 4th of July, which is a national holiday here in the United States. We'll talk about why that is. And as usual, we're going to answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Remember, you can get a complete transcript of this podcast along with the definitions of the words that we use and sample sentences, as well as tips on learning English. All of this is available on our website in our learning guide at eslpod.com. Our first topic today is country music. And country music, which is sometimes called country and western music, is actually lots of different types of music that are popular in the United States. It originally comes from the southern United States, the southern states. And when we say the southern United States, or sometimes just the South with a capital S, S-O-U-T-H, we mean the states of Louisiana, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, perhaps even Texas and Virginia would be included in the South. Georgia is also part of the South. But this music, although it originally comes from the South, is popular in many different areas. It's very popular in rural areas of the United States. Rural, R-U-R-A-L, is the part of the United States, the part of a country that is outside of the city, where there are farms, for example. So it's a popular type of music, and many type of people like it. It's, again, very popular, especially in the southern United States and in rural areas. And the term country or country and western, as I said, also includes lots of different types of music. Some people think country music all sounds the same, and that's not true. There are lots of different kinds of country or country and western music. Bluegrass music, for example, is part of country music. Music that is made with banjos. A banjo is an instrument, sounds like this. That's also considered country music. There's also music which was originally called Western music, but again, country and Western, and now we usually just say country music, includes music about cowboys, music about people who work in the western part of the United States where there were lots of cowboys. A cowboy, C-O-W-B-O-Y, is a man who is in charge of keeping the animals from leaving the farm, from leaving the area where they are being used. And this is country and Western music has lots of different types of music. A typical country and Western song is difficult to define, but normally when you think about country music, there is a stereotype. A stereotype, S-T-E-R-E-O-T-Y-P-E. A stereotype is what people think is true, but is usually a overgeneralization. So you think that everyone is like that. Everyone in Minnesota is always happy. Well, that would be a stereotype, not a true stereotype. So stereotypes are not always true, but you assume it to be true for everyone. Well, there's a stereotype of country music that it's usually about a man who has lost his wife or lost his girlfriend, and now he's sad, and he's singing a song about how sad he is because he lost his girlfriend or his wife. His wife or his girlfriend left him is the idea. And that's kind of a stereotype of a country music song. Some of the most popular country music singers have been people like Dolly Parton. Dolly, D-O-L-L-Y, Parton, P-A-R-T-O-N, is very famous in the United States. She's a country singer, actually a very good singer. She was also in a few movies back in the 1980s. Willie Nelson is also a popular singer, a man who is he's getting old now, but he is very popular as a country artist. And a third one would be Kenny Rogers. Kenny, K-E-N-N-Y, Rogers, R-O-G-E-R. Yes, and Kenny Rogers had many popular country songs that sold a lot of records. He sold a lot of records with these country songs. One of Kenny Rogers' most famous songs is actually about a man who loses his wife, whose wife leaves him, and it's called Lucille. Lucille was the name of the wife. And so if you ask an American to sing this song, most of them have know it. They've heard it. It was very popular back in the, I think, 1970s. Might have been 1980s. And, of course, I will sing it for you because I know that you want me to. You took a fine time to leave me, Lucille. Four hungry children in a crop in the fields. Well, that's all you get. You'll have to buy my album, my record, my CD, to hear the rest of that song. You picked a fine time to leave me. Is kind of a joke line. You've picked a terrible time, is what he's actually saying, to leave me, Lucille, his wife. He has four hungry children and a crop, C-R-O-P, a crop in the field. A crop is when you grow corn or wheat. Whatever you grow on the farm is called your crop. And he has a crop in the field that he has to go and get, and his wife has left him. So a very sad song, but a very famous country song. Some of the most famous country singers are now not from the United States. One of the most famous ones is a singer from Australia by the name of Keith Urban. And so country music has become popular in other countries as well. Our second topic today is the national holiday here in the United States, the 4th of July. July 4th is American Independence Day, and it celebrates the signing of the Declaration of Independence. A declaration is a statement, usually telling other people what you think, what you believe. And in this case, it was a declaration saying that the American colonies were going to separate themselves from Great Britain, from England. And, of course, the English didn't like that idea. And so there followed the Revolutionary War, which, of course, was won by the people in the colonies, in the American colonies, and who then formed the United States. But the 4th of July is actually the day that the Declaration was signed back in 1776. Well, 4th of July as a holiday here in the United States is usually celebrated by a parade. Individual towns, especially smaller towns, often have a 4th of July parade where you have the marching band. The marching band is the band usually from a college or a high school who play music as they walk. And they walk through the parade, in the parade, I should say, playing music. And, of course, to march, M-A-R-C-H, as a verb means, in this case, to walk. So there are marching bands and there are always parades. There are also a celebration at night. There is fireworks, so there are fireworks. And fireworks, F-I-R-E-W-O-R-K-S, always in the plural. Fireworks is when you have the lights in the sky and they shoot up well, it's almost like a bomb, but it's not a bomb. It explodes and you see these wonderful colors. So there is always a fireworks display, we would say, D-I-S-P-L-A-Y, a fireworks display, or sometimes just a fireworks show on the 4th of July. There are some places that also have concerts on the 4th of July. Washington, D.C., the capital, there's always a big concert on what's called the Mall, M-A-L-L, the Mall. Now, the word mall, usually people think of mall, they think of a shopping center, a place where you can buy things is called a mall. But in Washington, D.C., the mall is actually the area, large area in front of the Capitol. And there are lots of buildings on the mall. The famous museums in Washington, D.C., the Smithsonian Museums, are all located on the mall. And so they have a big concert there and then fireworks afterwards. Boston is also famous for its concert on the 4th of July. And many people growing up, like me, remember watching the Boston Pops Orchestra. And the Boston Pops, P-O-P-S, Orchestra was people who played in the Boston Symphony Orchestra. But they called it Pops because it was a orchestra that played more popular music. And so they would always play popular music. And the last song that you always hear on a 4th of July concert is called Stars and Stripes Forever. Stars and Stripes. The United States flag is made up of stars, 50 stars, and 13 stripes. A stripe, S-T-R-I-P-E, is a narrow piece of something or a narrow color of something. The United States has 13 stripes, red and white, that represent the 13 original states of the United States. And so there's a famous song called Stars and Stripes Forever by a American composer by the name of John Phillips Sousa. And you may recognize the song if you hear it. The 4th of July is also a time for family parties, and it is very popular for people to have barbecue parties on the 4th of July, where they cook the food outside, outdoors, we would say. O-U-T-D-O-O-R-S. Outdoors means outside of your house. And they cook hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken and steak and all sorts of good things. Usually you have corn on the 4th of July, what we would call corn on the cob. Corn on the cob, C-O-B. A cob is the stick that the corn grows on. And so to have corn on the cob means you get the whole stick of corn. We'd call it a cob of corn. And you eat it right off of that cob or that stick. I'm getting hungry. But first, I'll answer a few questions. Our first question comes from Grace. Grace is originally from Taiwan, now lives in New York City. She wants to know the difference between the word clever, C-L-E-V-E-R, and smart. What's the difference between clever and smart? Both words can mean intelligent. Someone who has a lot of intelligence is smart. However, we use the word clever usually to mean someone who is intelligent, but also who is very quick to learn something. We also use the word clever when we are trying to describe someone who may be intelligent, but uses their intelligence to do something perhaps not honest, something dishonest. The best example of this is probably from the Greek epic poet Homer, who wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. The Odyssey has the main character of Odysseus, or as they call him in Rome, Ulysses. And this was the person who, you may remember, after the Trojan War, the war of the Greeks against the city of Troy, Odysseus, or Ulysses, took 10 years to get back to his home in Ithaca, the island of Ithaca. Well, this is a character in Greek mythology who was considered very clever. So we would call him clever because he was able to think of things and get himself out of difficulty very intelligently. A smart person, if we use the word smart, we're usually talking about someone who is, for example, good in school. She's very smart. She's a good student. That's how we would use that word. Our next question comes from Uwe, U-W-E, in Germany. And the question here has to do with how we address people, how we talk to people in English using the you form of the verb, informally and formally. Well, many languages, such as German and Spanish, French, many of the Romance languages, Italian, Portuguese, and other languages have a different form of the verb if you are talking to someone who is a friend of yours or who is in your family and someone who is your boss or someone who is older than you or a stranger. In English, we do not have a different form of the verb to distinguish between someone you know. In Spanish, it would be the tú form. And someone who you don't know, a stranger or someone in authority, someone older than you. We don't have a difference in the verbs. We instead use things like the titles of people. So we'll call someone Mr., Mr. Smith, Ms. Kim. These would be ways of showing that person respect. So we don't call them by their first name. We only use their last name with a title, like Mr. or Dr. or Ms. or Mrs. Another way that we show respect sometimes is use the word for a man, sir, and for a woman, ma'am. So someone may say, excuse me, ma'am, or excuse me, sir. If you are trying to ask someone a question on the street, you want to find out where the nearest bathroom is, and you say, well, excuse me, sir. Excuse me, ma'am, can you tell me? That's a polite way of addressing someone using the you form of the verb, but adding something that makes it so that you are showing respect for that person. And in English, we do it in an indirect way, not a direct way with the verb itself. At least that's for most of the cases where we have formal and informal. Gunawan, G-U-N-A-W-A-N, is originally from Indonesia, but he's also living in Germany, in Berlin, and he has a question about the words college and high school. What's the difference between a college and a high school in American English? Well, in some countries, the word college is used to mean the same as a high school. It's often a place where you go if you are going to be studying at the university, before you get your bachelor's degree. In the United States, the word college only means after high school. College and university are used pretty much the same. So if someone says, I'm going to college, that means that they're probably 18, 19, 20, sometimes older, years old, and they are going to the university. They've already finished high school. High school is just those grades, usually between 9 and 12. Sometimes we include what's called junior high school, beginning at grade 7 through 12. That's high school in the United States system. And so we don't use college unless we mean university. Thai, T-A-I, in Vietnam, has a question. And he wants to know the difference between the verbs to ride and to drive. When do you use ride and when do you use drive? We use the verb drive when we're talking about a car or a truck. The person who is controlling the car is the driver, and he or she is driving the car. So drive is used for cars and trucks. For a bicycle or a motorcycle, we would use the verb ride. I ride a motorcycle. I ride a bicycle. Now, you can also use ride with another preposition to mean to be in the same vehicle. For example, I ride in the car means that I'm not the one driving. I'm sitting next to the driver or in the back seat. So you can also ride in an airplane. You're not flying the airplane. Notice the verb is to fly if it's an airplane. We don't say we drive an airplane. We say we fly an airplane. But most people don't fly the plane. They're not controlling the plane. They're sitting in the plane. We would say they are riding in an airplane. You can ride animals. You can ride a horse, for example, just like you ride a bicycle. Although with a horse, you can also say you rode on a horse. And if you weren't controlling the horse, that probably is the expression you would use. For other means of transportation, a bus, for example, there is a driver of the bus, but most people ride on the bus. You can also say, I ride the bus without the preposition. And again, it just means that you are in the bus. You are not actually driving it. A train, we don't use drive for a train. You can ride on a train. The verb for the person who controls the train would probably be conduct, because a train has a conductor, and that's the person who is in charge of the plane, of the train, rather. So thank you, Ty, for that question. Next question comes from Wachira, Wachira, in Thailand. And the question is about the expression, tell me about it, exclamation point. Tell me about it. If you said it like that, what does that mean? Well, let's say that you are working very hard and someone else comes in who has also been working very hard and says, boy, I'm really tired. And you say to them, tell me about it. What that means is you don't need to tell me about it. It's not necessary. I know already. From my own experience, I know what you are talking about. You don't need to tell me. But we don't say, don't tell me about it. We say, tell me about it. And it's almost meant as a joke, meaning you don't have to tell me about it. We're being a little sarcastic. To be sarcastic, sarcastic, means that you are making a joke. You are making fun of a situation. You don't really mean what you say. And in this case, when you say, tell me about it, that's an informal way of saying, you don't need to tell me. I already know. I understand. So thank you, Wachira, for that question. Our final question comes from Marat, M-A-R-A-T. Not sure exactly where Marat is from. I'm going to guess from France, just because of the famous painting by David called The Death of Marat in English. It's a famous painting of a French revolutionary who was murdered in his bathtub, and there's a painting of him by the painter David. Well, that's not a very nice thought, is it? Well, it's a beautiful painting, and Marat, wherever you are from, you have a question about the expression to throw in the towel. The sentence Marat wants to understand is, I was ready to throw in the towel, but I stayed with it. To throw in the towel, T-O-W-E-L, means to give up, to say, I'm quitting, I'm stopping. Usually if you're doing something difficult and you decide that it's just too difficult to do, you're going to quit. You're going to throw in the towel. In this sentence, the person says, I was ready to throw in the towel, but I stayed with it. To stay with something means to continue with it, not to stop. Usually, when it's even if it's difficult, you continue doing it. You persist. P-E-R-S-I-S-T. That's the same as to stay with, to continue with something, even if it's difficult. So thank you, Marat, for that question, wherever you are. If you have a question, You can email us at ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com and ask your question. We cannot answer everyone's question. We get many questions every week, but we will certainly try to answer as many as we can. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll see you next time on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.